Hi and welcome to another episode of The Baked Bear. We're looking at episode 42. Well, the playoffs. Well, they're playoffing, aren't they? Our Bruins are still up 3-2 after going 1-1 since we last spoke, so obviously lots to talk about. A great road win and an unnecessarily emotionally violent home loss. Officiating again. Home shit home, Monty, pasta, and so much more. I got a couple of takes to check in on. From the last two episodes, I've got my high take and my haiku, and they are diametrically opposed. And I'm going to talk out scapegoats, so let's go. I am Jay Pike. The Big Bear is presented in partnership with 6342 Productions. You can find me on Twitter at @my_Bruins, the podcast itself at The Big Bear Pod. Always love to hear what you're feeling and thinking so we can talk it out. And don't forget to rate, review, follow, subscribe, like, love, I don't know, all the other things that make you do on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Now, I'm not going to dwell all that much on Game 4 at all, really, because, like, the W is great. I'm happy to be, you know, to have had a win in Game 4, but that performance was 2 games ago, feels like a month ago now, and really it's no longer all that relevant, really. Like, in a micro sense, you know, in a macro sense, maybe a little more. You know, we got the win. Swayman was incredible, of course. That's, I guess, all we got to say about that one. Swayman's numbers going into Game 5. So after, you know, another great Game 4, another dub for Sway, going into Game 5, he had 3 wins, a 1.34 goals against average, and a .956 save percentage. That's just mad. After Game 5, still at 3 wins, his goals against average has gone up to a ballooning, just awful 1.49. And his save percentage, you know, you're not going to like this at all. It went down 0.04 of a point to 0.952%. Oh, fuck it, Al. Sway's playing out of his mind. Like, and the way that game went with that loss, I think you have to go back to Swayman. My original thought was, if we lose, you know, Ullmark in 6, Swayman in 7, no problem. And if that is the choice Monty goes with, honestly, I'm not going to have... I love both our goalies. I think both of them can win and steal any game. So I'm going to be perfectly confident in our goaltending, because our goaltending has not been the reason that we've lost any games. Like, not even a little bit. So it doesn't matter to me which one you put in net. And I'm guessing it doesn't matter to, you know, the 18 skaters that are on the ice either. But after the way that game went, Swayman was insane, right? He was putting on that absurd kind of goaltending, right? That goaltending that's like, oh, this guy's going to steal a game for you. And that is, I mean, honestly, I didn't feel all that bad. You know, I don't like overtime, but like, I no point was I feeling as bad, poorly as we were playing. I was still like, Sway's got this one, right? Like, I don't know, I was overconfident in him or overconfident in the ability of the other 18 guys, you know, that were dressed and playing to actually do something. But one way or the other, I'm confident in the goaltending. But if it's me, after just a brutal loss like that, one Swayman did not deserve, I don't want to sit that guy. I want to put him right back out there, right? I don't know. Sway knows how well he played. He knows he deserved a win. I'm putting him back in. If it's me, if he goes with Ullmark, I'm okay with it. Man, we need more from Zacha and Pasta. Coming into the playoffs, I think I tweeted it a few times. Like, I really felt like Pasta, he looked dialed in. He looked like he was a bit of a man on a mission. And it was that was one of the big parts of me why I felt so confident and said it was going to be a 5-game series. Because I really felt like Pasta, and then, of course, Zacha would be, you know, coming along with him. Like, these guys would be stepping up and saying, this is not happening again. We're going to cut this off right now at the head of the... and just be done with it. And I thought Pasta would be able to do that. And, you know, hasn't really come through that way in the series, right? He's largely been shut down. He does have, you know, a couple of goals, I believe. And one of them was a beauty, but... that one also came in a loss, I suppose. But in Game 5, like, not only was he basically shut down, but he nearly pretzeled his own left knee when he had to go down to block a shot that he had to go down and block because it was his fault there was even a leaf in the zone because he had committed an egregious and unacceptable turnover right at the blue line and the Leafs were coming. So I love that he did that. I love that he took the, you know, he got in front of that shot. But watching his knee kind of roll the bit that it did, it was like, see, this shouldn't have even happened. And that was a frustrating moment for me, to be honest with you. It really was. That was what I was fixing on, was that, like, you could have torn your knee up and our playoffs would be truly done. And who knows, you know, how next season looks for you. All on a play that should not have happened. Zach has been mostly fine, you know, but fine isn't going to win this series. He's got to find another gear, right? I'm not saying, you know, he's not McDavid. I'm not expecting that, but he's got to have another gear that he can just ramp up a little bit for the playoffs right now. And like on the draw too, like, you know, sometimes you got to like just sheer will has to make a play. Actually, in game four, Marchand won a faceoff. I think it was the one right before he got tackled. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But that was Will. Marchand was just like, got there to the dot and was like, I am not losing this faceoff. And he didn't. So, I don't know. I'd like to see maybe a little bit more of that. And Zaka, I'm surprised at how lighthearted these guys who went through this last year were last night. I don't know, man. We need a little more from some of our stars. Obviously, Jake DeBrusk got off to an incredible start to the series. I'm not complaining, right? He's a big part of why we were up 3-1. Just feels like we might need him a little bit again. So if playoff Jake, the Leaf Mulcher, is in there and he's got one more game in him, Thursday night, probably tonight while you're listening to this, would be nice. It was nice to see Freddie score again. He's got 3 goals now. But it doesn't feel like that, really, does it? Like, I don't know. It's like, I'm so glad he's got 3 goals. But it feels to me like there's still more to come from Freddie. I don't feel like he's shined. But he has been finishing, right? So I can take the good, I can take the bad, you know. And there you have the Freddie's of life. Another Freddie of life is that Heinen is clearly not himself. I think of all our forwards, he's the most obviously banged up. He's nursing something. To me, I think you might have to sit him. I think, you know, we just talked about Pasta and Zaka, and I can't help but wonder if Heinen not being at, you know, whatever you would consider 100% for the playoffs, he's not there. His play, is that affecting Zaka and Pasta? You'd like to think Zaka and Pasta, you know, could pretty much play and succeed with me on their wing. But Heinen was really playing well with them. He filled a role with them. And it's hard for him to do his role right now. So, I don't know. Might have to see Heinen get sat. It's a strange thing to be saying, but c'est la vie. It is a good thing, though, of course. Brazzy's back. Justin Brazeau back in the lineup for game 4. Lauko is still healthy and was playing very well. He's waiting to get back in. So I think we got guys, right? We got bodies who can do stuff. We got talent. We got depth. I think we might need to use it and give Heinen a little time to even just get 5% better. Doesn't need to be his best, but needs to be better. Well, that whole line I suppose. Man, Brandon Carlo is a fucking stud. Like, he's been our best defenseman in this series, and I don't think it's even been particularly close. Right? It feels to me, and maybe you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels to me like Carlo hate amongst Bruins fans has weakened or lessened or softened over the last year and a bit. I don't know. It just, you know, you're on Twitter and you're interacting with people and you get very used to, you know, seeing certain things and certain storylines and whatnot. And I don't know. It feels to me like the Carlo haters have dialed it back a little bit. They probably have someone else in their sights. So, yeah, we're going to be talking scapegoats a little bit later anyway when we talk it out. So, you know, keep it going, Carlo. Fucking stud. Not a stud in this series has been Hampus Lindholm. He's definitely made some great plays in these playoffs, right? I can remember him stopping a goal. You know, I talked about it on the last pod. Interesting talking about him again here, and that's still the play I'm going back to. I guess that's not the greatest of signs. And he does, I said it last episode as well, he plays a lot of hard minutes, but he's got some tightening up to do. Like, still, again, another guy who went through this last year, a guy who was hurt last year, and that definitely affected his game. And we thought, man, look how healthy he is coming into this playoff. Like, you're just expecting a little bit more. And I can tell you, there's a lot of people, a lot of Bruins fans, they got frustration brewing with Lindholm. So you might have a whole new scapegoat coming in. Who knows? If other scapegoats get shipped out, we're going to need to reload the scapegoat gun. So we'll have to see about that. But it'd just be nice to see Lindholm tighten up just a bit on just get the fucking puck out of the zone, man. Honest to God, ice it. I don't care. Get it out. Weatherspoon, though, man, he's been all right. And maybe some of this, of course, is the game of expectations. I'm expecting more from Lindholm. I'm expecting more from Pasta, Zacha, right? So judging Weatherspoon, I'm judging him on a different grade. Of course I am. Right? But to me, he's basically in pen for this lineup. My question is, could Weatherspoon handle 20-plus minutes a game? Right now we got Mac, Carlo, Lindholm all playing, I think it's like averaging 22-plus a game right now. Everyone else is under 20. I think Grizz somewhere around 18, Weatherspoon somewhere around 17. But is there, you know, 3-4 more minutes in there for Weatherspoon? You know, he does kill penalties. Like he, I don't know, I might prefer him to some of these heavy minutes that, you know, are going to come to Lori. You know, if Weatherspoon plays a little more, you're just limiting the exposure on the back end by another 3 minutes. I don't know. I can't see a lot of a problem there, but I know, you know, look, Monty mixes the lines, so you can talk about any configuration you want, to be perfectly honest with this team. That's just how it goes. So I don't know. Can Weatherspoon handle a little more? Would it work? I don't know, but looking at the minutes, I was like, man, it feels to me the way he's playing like he should be the fourth guy in minutes for sure. I mentioned Lori. He's been all right. It's funny how his mistakes largely get just ignored by Bruins Twitter and so many Bruins fans. While Grizz, if he grabs his water bottle incorrectly, people are screaming for him to be traded and shipped off and, you know, fired into the sun and all those things. And I know Lori's a rookie. Shiny new toy, right? And when he has the puck on his stick and he's moving around, like, the fucking guy is smooth. Right? Like, oh, I like it. But also, rookie defenseman, you know, he's getting walked a little bit as well. And the Stanley Cup playoffs don't give a flying fuck that the guy's a rookie. The Stanley Cup playoffs does not care. Right? If Lowry makes a rookie mistake and it leads to a goal that ends our season, is that going to hurt less than if Grizz makes a mistake that ends our season? A mistake that implodes the season, the whole damn year is a mistake that implodes the whole damn year. So in the playoffs, he's a rookie. That's to me, that's not an excuse. Regular season is one thing. But when we're here in the playoffs and there are other, you know, defensemen who can be playing, it's, I don't know. It's just, it's always interesting like that, you know, again, scapegoats. Oh, speaking of scapegoats, looks like Derek Forbert is back and ready to go. I'm actually not as down on him as being back as a lot of fans are. There was a lot of the Ryan Reynolds taking, you know, with the mask on his face and saying, why? There was a lot of that after it kind of got out there that it started looking like Forbert was going to play anyway in game 5. He did not. We don't know about 6 or if there's a 7. But for right now, hasn't cracked the lineup yet, but Bruins Twitter didn't need him to actually be in the lineup to melt down about it a little bit. And I don't know, you know, we got one defenseman already hurt. You got Lowry, Grizz, some guys, you know, getting walked a little bit. Is it that bad to have another defenseman? Even if it is Derek Forbert, is there no chance that he comes back better than he was this season? Is there no chance he comes back better than last playoffs? He's had time off. He's been able to rehab. He should be healthier and more rested than most guys. He's not going to be able to play five games in a row right now. He's not going to have the conditioning. But is he going to be that bad? Is he going to be worse than what's there? Like, I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. You know he's getting in. I mean, honest to God, if we go to a Game 7 with the Leafs, if that nonsense happens, you know Forbert's playing Game 7. That's a mortal lock. Put that in cement. Maroon's been a little quiet. At least it feels that way since coming to Swayman's, you know, defense and all that. Over Domi knocking Swayman down and all that silliness. But a little quiet. He's still there. He's a presence I like. So there are four guys, four forwards on our team that are winning better than half of their faceoffs. Would you like to take a guess? I'm going to get sued. You can't sue me because there's no way that was on key. The answer, four guys on the Bruins roster who are winning better than half of their faceoffs right now in these playoffs through five games. Beecher, Boqvist, Marchand, and Pasta. It's not ideal, to be perfectly honest. Obviously, Marchand and Pasta, not centers, you know, but they end up having to go in and take faceoffs from time to time when the centers get kicked out. And they've actually done a decent job. So that's, I guess that's good, but man, you know, I think Beecher's gonna, he's gonna have to be back in that lineup. We need some more faceoffs. JVR's probably got to sit too. I know I kind of said like I want game 3 and 4 lineup back for game 6. But I think if you wanted to swap out Laux for JVR, I'd be fine with that. You know, some speed, some energy might be a little more valuable than slow JVR. Yeah. Geeky hasn't really gone geeko mode yet. Kind of waiting. I kind of thought he'd have like a game where it was like, damn, right? I thought he'd just have a game. Maybe have a goal and an assist and, you know, play a big role, make a big hit. And just, you know, you're doing 5 or 6 game series. If Geeky can have one banger, I would take it. So, I don't know. Maybe a geeky geeko banger coming in game 6. Oh, and you thought the four guys who are actually winning better than 50% of their faceoffs was my only fun stat for you. Oh, friends, no. Our Bees are 2-5 in their last 7 home playoff games, including 0-3 in overtime. So we're 2-2 in our last 4 games in that home that don't go to overtime. That doesn't really sound any better, to be perfectly honest with you. It just makes no sense. Such a good home playoff team. Do the ups and downs of the crowd play too much with the guys' heads? You know, Bruins fans can be fickle. Let's put it that way. And, you know, the tension and the anxiety Bruins fans feel in certain moments, it can be palpable. And if it's palpable to you, it's probably palpable to them. I'm as shocked as you are that I said palpable about 4 times there and didn't mess it up once. This is first take, I swear. So I don't know about this home ice situation. It makes very little sense to me. That's why I feel like let's just right now do game 6. Don't let it get to 7, because then everyone's going to talk about exactly that. 2-5, 2-5, 2-5. Oh, last year, 3-1, 3-1, right? Like, we got storylines we need to get behind us, and this would be a nice one to do. And we can get rid of both of those storylines actually with a game 6 win. So let's see. If we're lucky enough to ice this series, we might actually be lucky in the next round to be playing Florida, because we will be the road team. Who knows? Might actually be an advantage for us. That'd be something. Obviously, today, in this episode, episode 42 of The Baked Bear, I'm choosing to focus largely on our Bruins, and I'm largely ignoring the Leafs, because I really feel like the Leafs didn't win Game 5. The Leafs didn't do much that decided anything. It was our guys. We kind of just handed the game to them from the jump, you know. So I'm going to keep my focus mostly on our guys and not theirs, because it's ours who need to right the ship. It's our guys who missed a great opportunity in Game 5 at home. Now, don't get me wrong. The Leafs' dysfunction was hilarious. This isn't Junior, bro. Like, that shit was funny. But the hilarity of it has been fully blunted by the turd we laid in Game 5. You know, that's what turds will do. So don't lay them. So there's really no point in me having any fun with it now. Obviously, I was planning on having lots of fun with it, as this was supposed to be a very fun episode. Oh, I had plans. Not this year, man. The roller coaster of playoff hockey is like a fucking... I don't even know if it's a mind fuck. It's a heart fuck. Holy cow, the ups and the downs are insane. So, yeah, keep yourselves strapped in there, my friends. Actually, speaking of roller coasters, Monty today has just said that he's still pissed. And he's going to stay pissed until puck drop in Game 6. So, I love that. So, I want to see something that shows that from them. Right? I want to see them... Like, the guys on the ice need to be pissed. They need to be pissed that their coach is pissed at them. They need to be pissed at how they played last game. Come out pissed. And let's do something in Game 6. Jesus Christ. Monty also praised Beecher and Shattenkirk for having been guys who responded all year after sitting a game or two. So you gotta like the sound of that, I guess. Again, that sounds like two guys who were in for 3 and 4 in Toronto. Two games we won, and we won not running away, but we won, you know, they were really good, strong Bruins road games, I thought. So I like the sound of that. We'll have to wait and see, of course. Monty is refusing to, you know, tell anybody anything these days, so we'll have to wait and see. But sounds like Beecher and Shatty, anyway, will be back in for Game 6. All right, lots more on the Bruins coming up, including a bunch more on Monty. We're going to have to talk a little bit about, you know, what's going to be up in Game 6. How are we feeling? We're going to kind of compare a little bit of our last two playoff rounds through 5 games as well. Right now, though, a few little non-Bruins things going on. Number one, it's hard being someone who loves a large number of podcasts, including sports ones, which can, you know, date themselves very quickly, and other entertainment, music, movies, TV ones, and as well. Like, when you really like listening to podcasts, sometimes music takes a back seat, and it's been tough. It's like, I could listen to this podcast, or I could listen to Pearl Jam's Dark Matter another time and a half, right? Like, or this podcast is longer. I could listen to Dark Matter through twice instead of listening to that one. It's hard, but I'm doing my best and I'm making lots of time. It's the first album that I've been like, man, I gotta learn all the words. Like, I gotta know it inside and out. So it's gonna take some time. But to be perfectly honest with you, I'm kind of disappointed in you right now as well. Like, you said, I'm gonna listen to The Baked Bear instead of listening to Dark Matter. And to me, that's just an objectively bad choice. So get your life in order. Isles, Caps, Lightning, Jets, all gone as of this recording. Very likely, I would say, that the Kings have also been eliminated. So we'll have to wait and see. Now, again, you're still listening for some reason. Go play Dark Matter. The cream's rising to the top, actually. Like, no big upsets in there. Teams taking care of teams. So the big question for me is, are Bruins, are they cream or just milk? Vegas and Stars, that seems to be the standout series of the first round. I still feel good about my Nashville pick. Yeah, I'm still feeling good about that one. Vancouver's got to go. Oh, here's something stupid we got to talk about. Can we all just agree that, like, rape of any kind isn't something that we should use as a way of, like, owning or dunking on a person or group of people or a team or a fan base or whatever? Like, as human beings, we have evolved over millions of years. Think about all of the things that we've created. The art, the comedy, the music. Surely we can come up with a better way of showing that one team is beating the hell out of another team without having to reference rape. Right? It doesn't sound complicated to me. And then there was also the need, for whatever reason, to make the Leaf Bear, the victim in this nonsense, a female with a tutu and a handbag and all of this. It's like, why? It's men playing men in sports. It's just, it's choices, and their choices Ryan Whitney made, and that's on him, you know? I think with all this shit, what's really interesting to me is that Ryan Whitney could have, no, he very much could have done this, I swear. He could have said, shit, you know what? Sorry, guys, I didn't mean to offend. I hear you. I get it. You know, that's, you know, there were other ways, there were better ways for me to make my point and be funny and blah, blah, blah. Never meant to offend anyone. It's taken down. You won't see anything like that from me again. But we don't listen to Pearl Jam. We react instead of responding. Everyone gets reactionary. They get defensive. Everyone digs their heels in. And then the radical anti-woke mob comes screaming from every corner of Elon's Twitter to attack anyone who says something as wildly liberal as rape isn't funny. Also not funny, but not as important. NHL officiating. My God. Another mockery of the game last night, I think, by the refs in our series. You know, and again, it went very much both ways. I am under no circumstances claiming that the refs are screwing the Bruins or having a Bruins bias. You know, this is a long-established take on reffing for me, right? It's greasy shite for everyone. And last night's game, Game 5, it was a very frustrating one, but it became, I don't know, a lot of it was, it became clear early on that the refs had no interest in actually calling the game. And when we had that hole, there was that big greasy scrum and all of that, and out of it somehow the Leafs got a power play. Bruins got two penalties, they got one. After that, it was like, oh, there's nothing. Like, Domi, I think, could literally put his stick through like Lindholm's eye socket, and somehow the refs would be like, well, we didn't see it. Like, it's yeah, it wasn't good. And of course, a big part of it, like Steve Kozari, you know, he couldn't even justify his bullshit. Mac Pasta kind of going to him for some answers, and he, you know, the charmer that he is, told them to fuck off. What a shitbird. Jesus Christ, Steve Kozari. Yes, and I know Gord Miller is going to clutch his pearls and come get mad at me because I'm criticizing a referee over a shit job that he did at his job for which he's paid very well. Kozari, of course. Yeah, he was in he got hurt pretty badly a few weeks ago. And he's back reffing. That's great. But he's back reffing, which means he's fair fucking game. He reffed a shit game last night. Jack Edwards called him a coward. He was a coward. Fuck off is what he told Mac and Pasta. Cowardice. He was a coward last night. Jack called it. It was true. He's back on the ice. He's back reffing and doing his job. He's open to every bit of criticism that every other person on that ice is. Gord Miller and his pearls can walk off that way. All right, a couple of quick check-ins. The question I asked last episode 41, was actually, when talking about the defense and all of this, I asked if Grizz might actually get back in for Shattenkirk in Game 4. Grizz, of course, came out for Game 2, and I thought, for Game 3, and I thought there was a chance that he'd get back in place of Shattenkirk for 4, just knowing Monty mixes things up all the time, but didn't happen in 4. It did happen in 5, but I'm guessing it's going back for 6. I opened last week talking about how incredible playoff hockey is. How, like, it's visceral, like you feel it physically. And that's easy to say through 3 games when your team is up 2-1 and playing very well. But then your team goes up 3-1, and then the other team starts to come back, which is similar to what was going on last year and what happened. And all of a sudden, instead of the full body, wow, look at this hockey, it's just anxiety. It just takes over. And suddenly it's too tense. And the excitement of the bodies crashing, it turns into, oh my God, instead of, yeah, like I'm all excited. Yeah, so it's a lot harder on the head now. And Bruins fans, we're going through it. So, you know, the anxiety time is here. And that's it's part of why we watch, believe it or not.
Knock it off, okay? I'm interviewing you.
No, you said that I'd be conducting the interview when I walked in here. Now, exactly how much pot did you smoke?
Well documented. One way that I help deal with my anxiety and whatnot with my sporting events is a little bit of the cannabis. And I got to give a shout out to Mikey150. You'll find him on Twitter. He's a great follow, at RangersEd150. He's hailing. He's out there in the most beautiful island in the world, Newfoundland. And he and I had a little chat this week about edibles. Because last episode, episode 41, I mentioned that I had begun kind of exploring edibles a little bit more. And I was happy with the early returns. So Mikey got at me and he said he was a former smoker and he made the switch to edibles. And man, he's very happy with his choices. I'll tell you that. I like that. He had some really good stuff for me. He's, in comparing the highs, he said the edible high is fluffier than the smoke high. And I just knew what he meant. You know, I knew what he meant. I got it. You know, I was like, yeah, that actually feels exactly right. Yeah, so I am going to keep exploring those, Mikey, because, yeah, you sold me on them even more than actually taking them did, so that was nice. I did mention to Mikey, like, the bonus, of course, of rolling some flower is that you can very quickly get your head cleared, you can wash away, blow away, whatever you got to do, a long day, a taxing day, whatever it might be. Like, you're not waiting kind of 90 minutes for your anxiety to go away. You can actually, you know, get rid of it a little sooner. But I think with edibles, timing is a bit of an art. So maybe that's what I got to work on. There we go to this episode's high take. I basically said it would be a 6-game series.
Let him finish.
Look, if I said something like, hey, I brought over 5 movies for us to choose from, for us to all watch together, would you judge me if actually I brought 6? No. What's the difference between 5 and 6, really? If you wanted 5 beers and you got 6 beers, are you upset? Are you crying? No. If you wanted a 5-inch sub and you got a 6-inch sub, are you upset? No. Because 5 and 6 are basically the same. If someone gives a movie a 5 out of 10 and someone else gives a movie a 6 out of 10, are you scrambling to find another review to clear it up because there's such a huge difference between those two ratings? The 5 out of 10, the 6 out of 10, they both gave you exactly the information you needed. So, you know, wanted a 5-game series? We're getting a 6-game series. Basically the same thing. So my 5-game high take is it's a 6-game high take now. This haiku was inspired by the lackluster play of our beloved Bruins in Game 5. I call it the not-so-killer bees. Instincts not deadly. Some ghosts yet to be ghosted. Here we go again.
I'm here! You got Q's, I got A's.
Did you say you've got AIDS?
No, I don't have AIDS. It's not what I said. Next question.
All right, I got 2 Q's to A this week. First one coming from a first-time Q asker. Thank you. Susan Munson. You'll find her on Twitter at Suze Muni? At SUZMUNEY. And Suzanne asks, she said, why is Monty dead set on changing the lineup every game? It's killing any chemistry, and don't get me started on face-offs. Beecher needs to be in the games for that alone. Well, here's what I came up with, Susan. Monty's a mad scientist. All right? And the problem with mad scientists is that while they are capable of brilliance, incredible brilliance, and they can achieve it often, they're also prone to blowing shit up. And, you know, I hope that, you know, Monty has learned a lesson from last year and, you know, because the script is kind of playing out word for word compared to last year, you know, and no one likes a sequel that's exactly like the original. You got to change things up, right? And hopefully Monty goes back to that winning formula. As I mentioned, I want that lineup from 3 and 4 back in. Maybe JVR for Lauko, something simple like that. But, you know, let's blow up the bad guy's season this time instead of Monty blowing up our, you know, the good guy's season. That's going to be kind of that key. And I got to agree about Beecher, you know, after that embarrassing display at the center dot. You know, again, I think Beecher might be in pen. Now, the one thing about that, we got to remember, or we got to ask ourselves, is Beecher taking a lot of these faceoffs that Bruins fans are like, man, we needed that faceoff win? Is it actually likely that Johnny Beecher is the guy who's taking that faceoff and not, say, Coyle or Zacha? So Beecher being in, I mean, will improve our faceoff percentage. I mean, there's almost no chance it doesn't, but it may not improve it in the ways that some fans maybe are expecting. So we'll have to see. If it's me, Susan, back to 3-4. Go to the winning formula and, you know, just no more fuckery, please. No more fuckery. Go back to the 3-4 lineup, Monty. Help us out and, you know, give fans like Susan and myself a little reprieve. We need it. And my guy, Steve McEachern, you know him at SteveJMacE on Twitter. Of course, the dude who does the Bruins Fastcast, your best way to get caught up quickly on your Bruins. And Steve said, hey, Jay, a bit deflated after last night. I can get that, Steve. Steve went on to say, please tell me the same thing as last year isn't going to happen again. Thanks, and many a preseason to you. And a many preseason to you as well, Steve. And I don't know why, but the scene in Scarface when Pacino's like drunk at the restaurant, he proclaims himself the bad guy. There's another line near the end of that that popped into my head for some reason, Steve, when I read your question.
Me? I always tell the truth. Even when I lie.
Yeah, read into that what you will, but I don't know. It worked for me. But let's have a look at these two series side by side through five games. Keeping it simple. 2023 Game 1. Bruins 3-1 win over the Panthers. 2024 Game 1. Bruins 5-1 win over the Leafs. Game 2, 2023, 6-3 Panthers. Game 2, 2024, 3-2 Leafs. Game 3, 2023, 4-2 Bruins. Game 4, 2024, 4-2 Bruins. Game 4, 2023, 6-2 Bruins. Game 4, 2024, 3-1 Bruins. Game 5, 2023, 4-3 Panthers. Game 5, 2024, 2-1 Leafs. We were actually more dominant against Florida through four games last year, especially on those two road wins in games 3 and 4. And maybe that's to be expected because our team was pretty dominant through, you know, the 82 games that came before those four games on the season as well. But then in 23, just like in 24 now, game 5, for some reason, just an unnecessary dud at home. No reason for it. But here it is, instead of putting it away. Honestly, I'm like looking at this little chart that I've got in front of me with the results I just read off to you, and I'm just like, are we sure that this year isn't just like a lower scoring version of last year with two teams that obviously aren't as good? Maybe that's why there's lower scoring. It's like two teams trying to play out the same plot from they saw from two exciting teams. I don't know, but I don't like how any of that sounded. So on that depressing thought, when have two series ever played out nearly beat for beat like that? When has it ever happened? 2 years in a row for it. Like, there are things that have been similar. There are things, you know, there you can draw comparisons if you want to. But this one's playing out far too similarly. Or at least we think it is. What do? We find patterns. We find them anywhere we want to find them. Patterns are important. Patterns help us figure things out. Patterns help us understand a lot of different things in our world. They help us make sense. The pattern that we're seeing right now with our Bruins is one that leads to violent overreactions and fans plummeting into the depths of despair. And it's an easy pattern to see, as I just laid out. Super simple pattern to see and look at and not bother getting into anything else. But I'm going to tell you and all the fans who are worried the pattern's playing out, it's a pattern so far. There's another piece to come, right? What if instead of an embarrassing loss here in Game 6, what if we put a happy little Bruins win right here in Game 6? Is it a pattern now? Oh, no, it is not. No more fuckery. All right, now I wanted to talk about scapegoats and fans. I think all fan bases have scapegoats. I don't think this is something unique to Bruins fans, but I do think we excel at it in a way that maybe other fan bases don't. A lot of that comes from the incredible passion we have for our team. I think it also comes from trauma over years. Like, Boston's a hockey city. Like, the Bruins are born in a real hockey city. Yet, as we saw with the meme that kind of went around over the last few weeks, you know, the Bruins maybe haven't had as many titles to match their success as, you know, say, a team like the Patriots did, you know, over their time. And these things kind of make fans a little crazy. Tuukka Rask being famously the most illogical scapegoat I think the Bruins fans have ever had. And after Game 5, I think many, if not most, Bruins fans, they had chosen their target. They chose the scapegoat they had in their sights, and it's Monty and or Grizz. That's it. It's one or the other or both. And it's all on them, it seems. So, Monty, of course, is getting his blame for the blunder, right? Changing up the roster and the lines for Game 5 after Games 3 and 4 were great wins. They had the same lineup both of those games. It's the lineup I'm hoping he trots out on a Thursday night. But Monty and his blender, of course, have always been a source of contention with a Bruins fan base. Monty wins and wins and wins, but his methods are, they're just never not in doubt. And I think until we get through a playoff series, I think it's going to kind of stay that way, right? And this is kind of classic fandom. Something is true until it's not, right? Monty can't coach a team out of the playoffs. You know, Swayman and Ullmark are now 0-5 in series clinching wins between the two of them. You really think one of them is never, ever going to win a series clinching game? Of course they are. Things in sports are true until they're not. And so, of course, Monty's using the blender. And, of course, Bruins fans think that we're going back to the pattern that we're all worried about playing before our eyes. And it's the trauma from last year, right? And even though a lot of fans, like myself, pretty calloused after last year, you know, you go out like we did last year, it really, you got to learn something from it as a fan, right? It's got to take a little edge off losing, at least in the near future. And this is certainly the near future, the playoffs after that sort of loss. So, you know, there's a lot of fans who just aren't feeling calloused, or I think a lot of fans maybe scratched and washed off their calluses as well, and might do a little bit of it to themselves. But man, anxiety gets doubled in the playoffs, right? It's got to be brutal for some fans, like, you know, but I get it. I truly do. Like, I feel like the Bruins fans who are can't keep the callous, can't step back and not let it hurt as much this year as it did last year. You know, you guys are like, you're like a mom who hasn't heard from her teen in an hour, right? And she's convinced that the kid is in a ditch somewhere dead. We're not in a ditch. We're just going to Game 6. Very big differences there. And Grizz, I mean, honestly, that poor dude. I'm convinced at this point that some fans just lock into Grizz whenever he's on the ice just to watch him pick out every little perceived mistake that he makes. I thought Grizz actually had a decent Game 5. He had a couple really good plays in the first two periods, some great back checking. Meanwhile, Mac is having a game, and that's not Grizz's fault. You know what makes it hard for Grizz to play his best? Meh, Mac. How is Grizz supposed to be his everything when the guy beside him who's being paid $9+ million is having a kind of game? I hold Mac more accountable for the game winner than Grizz, right? I brightly remember seeing Tavares make his move, right? It was that moment. It's like, okay, he's pushing. It's Grizz. It's like, oh shit. Okay, fuck. Here we go, Grizz. Come on. And then my first thought, right after, kind of right as it got to the net, I actually thought, shit, that wasn't bad, Grizz. Like, shit, it's not bad, Grizz. Well, Toronto scored. Why? Because Mac didn't get back and coiled, didn't toil, right? Grizz is not perfect, right? But he's a really easy target. And I think a lot of fans are, you know, got him in their sights, a little more than they should. But regardless of all of that, every single word, forget all of them, like I already have. The Bruins should have won Game 5. The roster that the Bruins put on the ice should have won Game 5. They put out 18 guys who absolutely should have won that game, and they played like shite. Couldn't win a faceoff. Yet, we were also one lucky bounce away from winning that game. I mean, at any time, if we had gone up 2-1 on them at any time, that game's over. We had all kinds of chances, despite playing like absolute garbage. But they'd have needed to show some killer instinct. They'd have had to have gone for the jugular. Like, they didn't. So, Grizz for Shattenkirk and Brazo for Beecher is why we lost Game 5? No. Now, a few hours before Game 5, I tweeted the following, and this is when all the discourse was going on about Forbert being healthy and possibly being back in the lineup for Game 5. And I tweeted out, I said, why I feel okay about Forbert being in. Sway between the pipes, plus Marchand, CC, Zacha, Mac, Carlo, and the rest of the leadership from last year, knowing tonight, meaning Game 5, is a game you need to win. No way these guys overlooked tonight after what happened last year. So none of that happened, basically. Forbert wasn't in, and none of those guys, the leadership and the stars, showed up. Now, the tweet mentions Forbert, but the meaning behind it has got nothing to do with Derek Forbert. It was me. I had an incredible feeling of confidence. This was an incredible, strong vote of confidence in our stars and our leadership, in those guys who felt the just brutal agony of last year's collapse. And I had all the confidence in them. It was not happening this year. So, oops. They failed across the board in Game 5. Monty and Grizz are part of the loss, and they each have their own piece of blame for it. But to me, the weight of this loss is on our Bruins stars and leaders. They took a night off that they knew they shouldn't take a night off. They should have been over-prepared to win. They should have overwhelmed the Leafs in the first period and put it to bed. So it kind of feels like they didn't learn anything last year, which is not something a lot of Bruins fans are happy to be hearing right now. So I laid out the first five games of the 2023-2024 first round series for our Bruins. So now let's take a look at Game 6. 2023 Game 6, 7-5 Panthers. An unmitigated disaster with a ridiculous third period. No reason again for us to have lost a game like that. And then we were put into that brutal position for Game 7. So in Game 6, which should be tonight for you, Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. That aforementioned Bruins leadership and star power that has ghosted its own team, apparently, sure did in Game 5, it has a second chance now. A second chance to show us they learned something from last year. Zacha, Pasta, Coyle, Mac, Marchand, DeBrusk. These guys need to step up in Game 6. They need to show up in Game 6. They need to end this in Game 6. And they need to make sure that on episode 43 of The Baked Bear, I am not playing clips from Groundhog Day. I really don't want to do that, as much as I love that movie. All right there, my friends. That's going to do for this episode of The Baked Bear. I have been Jay Pike. You can find me on Twitter at @my_Bruins, the podcast itself at The Baked Bear Pod. You can always shoot me an email, bakedbearpod@gmail.com. And don't be afraid to leave a rating and a review wherever it is you listen to all your favorite pods. Later, taters. Go bees. My cat is moving my microphone out of protest.
That's the bad guy.